May it please the court. The rationale underlying the Occupational Safety and Health Act is control. Who is best able to control and alleviate hazards in the workplace?
Well, could you explain to us what exactly is at stake here? I mean, you've got LEM, is that what they call it, or LEM, whatever they want to call it. You have this subsidiary, and is it that you can't get complete relief against the subsidiary? What are you seeking by way of you're seeking a fine against both of them, obviously, right? LEM, how much are you asking? How much do you want from LEM?
Well, Your Honor, statutorily, the United States can get $100,000 against each of the defendants if they are found liable.
So, in other words, if you just went against LEM, you could just get $100,000. But if you go against MYR, also, you get another $100,000. Is that what's involved?
Well, that is correct, Your Honor, and hopefully also some corrective action against both of them.
You mean an injunction of some sort?
No, but it would give them an incentive to correct the way they do things. Right now, if the judgment of the district court stands, then there is no incentive for MYR Group or the L.E. Myers Group to change the way they do things.
Here's the corporate veil here, aren't you saying that MYR is the real employer?
Insofar as safety training is concerned, yes, in many respects.
And the argument we're restricted to that proposition. I don't know how, technically I still think we'd have some problems, but at least it might make some sense. But your argument here, you could apply this to any third party, couldn't you?
No, Your Honor.
Would you engage in training?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that the argument that we're making would have such wide-ranging applications, and here's why. Most third-party trainers would not have the amount of control that a parent company can exercise towards...
Oh, my goodness, but, you know, my goodness, impose liability here? Can you create an incentive against third parties to do training for employers everywhere? I mean, people would be terrified.
Well, no, Your Honor. What we're talking about here is a willful violation.
Well,
we would have...
Who decides if it's willful? You decide if it's willful.
Well, we'll have to prove that at trial, Your Honor. I mean, this is a motion to dismiss, and the government will have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these violations occurred and that they were willful and that they resulted in the deaths of these employees.
If OSHA has not ever interpreted the regulation in the way you wish to interpret it, how is criminal liability appropriate? I mean, that's quite a leap, isn't it?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor. The regulation is quite clear that it could allow training to be provided by someone other than the employer. In fact, these regulations don't even contain the word employer.
Does OSHA interpret the act to impose multi-employer liability outside the construction context?
I believe it recently has, Your Honor, and that is contained in the...
circuit?
I believe in its commentary, and that's contained in the appendix to MYR's brief, Your Honor. I believe it's Appendix A to MYR's brief. The OSHA has stated that it's not limited in application to the construction industry. And in terms of the goals of the Occupational Safety and Health Act, there is no reason to limit it.
But it's a tremendous power grab, because as Judge Rovner was pointing out, your theory, because you're not arguing piercing the corporate veil, your theory does not depend on the fact that MYR is the parent of LEM. Your theory is that if a trainer has employees and is therefore an employer, the trainer is liable for any willful violation of OSHA regulations.
But in this case, Your Honor, the parent corporation had a lot more knowledge about the...
I understand that, because look, you can either argue that the LEM is just an alter ego, or you have to respect the fact that these are separate corporations. look, you can have a situation which MIR is not affiliated with LEM, but nevertheless, LEM turns over complete responsibility for training to MIR. And you'd have exactly the same case. The corporate connection could be completely irrelevant.
But that isn't the case that we have here, Your Honor. In this case, MIR used its power, assumed its power as parent corporation to dictate what the safety...
But what difference would it make if it dictated because it was a parent or dictated because it had a contract in which LEM had turned over to it complete responsibility for training, which must be extremely common because you have all sorts of specialized... activities, and so you go out and you hire the best company you can find to train these people, and you say, look, I don't know anything about electrocution. You do the manuals, the this, the that, you do everything as my, contract partner.
Well,
and are you saying in a case like that there's no liability because there's no corporate affiliation?
No,
are you prepared to disclaim that?
No, Your Honor.
Then you're in Judge Rovner's trap, which is that you've all of a sudden extended OSHA liability to the whole range of third parties that provide training or facilities or assistance or information to employers.
Well, no, Your Honor. It is not just assistance or information. It is dictating what the...
Yes, but you said that the dictation can be pursuant to contract. I'm afraid my law clerks will stick their fingers into the electric sockets in my office, right? So I go and hire an electrician to train these people. They mustn't put their fingers in the sockets, right? And I could say, look, I don't know anything about electricity. So you, electrician, you're completely responsible for this safety problem. I'm delegating it to you. I'm paying you. And I'm not going to have anything to do with it because I don't know anything about electricity. Now, it seems to me the logic of your argument is that the electrician says, well, just don't put your right hand in the socket, just your left hand, and you'll be fine. That person would be liable for violating OSHA regulations. Isn't that true? Isn't that your position?
Your Honor, if that electrician had complete control, if you and could dictate how, this was part of your daily activity,
right.
If it had complete control over
right.
what you,
of course.
But I think, Your Honor, the fact of the matter is, it's going to be very, very rare that an employer who's engaged in electrical construction and maintenance work is going to hand over complete control to a third party and say, you can tell my employees how to do their jobs. And that's what we're alleging MIR did in this case. And that's what distinguishes us. And again, we're going to have to...
Yes, but it has nothing to do with a corporate affiliation. Your proposition is, if the third party is really in control, then he's liable. And it doesn't matter whether he's in control by virtue of contract or by virtue of ownership.
But again, Your Honor, that is a possibility, but it is hard to imagine that happens.
I think it's extremely easy to imagine because you often have companies that are engaged in activities. I mean, suppose I run a limousine service. Does that mean that I am an expert on automobile safety? So I might hire a garage and say, look, it's very important for my limousines that they don't blow tires, that they don't explode and so forth. And so you're going to be in charge of keeping my limousines safe and in running order and all this stuff. Now, why isn't that an entirely plausible division of responsibilities?
Well, and Your Honor, and this court has adopted a functional approach in its past decisions that has said it's a fact-by-fact,
No, but what's novel is the suggestion that the third person has OSHA responsibilities as opposed to the actual employer. So if one of my limousines, you know, blows a tire and a driver who is an employee of mine is injured, and this was in violation of OSHA regulations, you know, for tire pressure, then I'm liable. But that doesn't mean that this garage I hired was liable. That's the novelty of your position.
Well, Your Honor, OSHA is clear that all employers are required to comply with the safety regulations promulgated pursuant to the Act. And if this limousine company engaged in the type of activities covered by the safety regulations, yes, it would have to comply with the safety regulations because otherwise you're standing in employee safety.
So now at least we understand the corporate affiliation is not essential to your position.
It's not essential, but we believe that in this particular case, it's significant.
You're saying there's dictation here of what you're ascribing to the parent company. You're saying they're the real employer, it seems to me, if you're saying that they can, because of the corporate structure, they can dictate the terms of compliance with the safety laws. But if that were the case, why are you prosecuting LEM if MYR is the real employer?
Because
you have to take one or the other?
Well, actually, the allegations against LEM are much broader than they are against MYR. They include safety training, but again, as MYR itself pointed out in its response brief, there are on-the-job types of training that the employer is responsible for just because of the particular circumstances of the job. And there may be some aspects of this case where LEM would be responsible for the case-by-case on-the-job training, pre-job briefing, things of that nature.
Ms. Reisig, forgive me, but 8 is missing from the record. Number 8 is missing from the record. So if you could get that to us.
Certainly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Reisig. Mr. Rubenstein?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel.
Oh, by the way, what is the status of the proceeding against LEM?
Pending a trial, Judge Brown has postponed trial to await this court's ruling. Your Honors, first of all, Judge Posner, to answer the first question that I think you raised, the additional incentive I think that the government sees in bringing this additional charge against the parent corporation does relate to the fines, and in fact, the fines here are not $100,000, they're $500,000 per count, and there are two counts against each of these entities, one for each of the fatalities at issue. So as you can see, there is a very significant result from the charging decision that's been made in this case. Ellie Myers is a separate company. It operates on its own. It conducts its own business. It engages in these operations involving electrical maintenance and repair. And in fact, as the government has stated, it is Ellie Myers that is being charged not just with training violations, which are completely coextensive with the training violations that its parent MYR is charged with. Ellie Myers has been charged with the substantive violations relating to safety issues at the workplace. For example, one of the alleged violations that Ellie Myers engaged in was the failure to conduct a pre-job safety briefing, which is required by OSHA at the beginning of every workday. And these briefings are where the foreman and the general foreman, who are Ellie Myers employees, are to discuss safety and training issues with their crews. That's what happened here, and that's what Ellie Myers is being held responsible for. And the government rightly seeks to charge Ellie Myers with these offenses, and we're happy to stand. Ellie Myers is happy to stand trial below on those issues, but
happy.
We're confident, Your Honor, that that the standards will not be met. There has been no willful violations here, but that's obviously for another day. Your Honor, the government had indicated that one of the reasons the court doesn't have to be concerned with this theory of liability going too far is that this is a criminal case and therefore there is a willfulness element. Of course, the government's theory isn't restricted to criminal cases. This theory would be broad enough to cover civil cases as well. And there is no willfulness element in many civil citations by OSHA. And as your honors have noted, the third-party liability that may result from this is unimaginable. It's not only third-party trainers, although that is an example that's directly on point. And by the way, not just third-party vendors who are in the business of training, but the unions, which are intimately involved with training issues. But outside of the training realm, there are many, many safety issues that third parties may be deemed liable for. For example, manufacturers or suppliers of equipment or tools or materials for engaging in construction or electrical construction activity all engage in business activities which affect safety on the workplace. It's hard to imagine that their involvement as a business, which is an employer under the Act because they have employees in interstate commerce, but that such a business as that could be deemed liable under any circumstances for a safety violation occurring at the work site. And the same would apply for safety consultants or for other third parties. And I think the court has recognized that that's just taking this too far. Your Honor, if I may, I need to... There has been little discussion about what I think was a central issue below, and that is this multi-employer worksite doctrine, which is the primary basis on which the government seeks to extend liability of the parent corporation. And Your Honors, if you haven't had a chance to focus on the Pitt-Des Moines case, which is the case that the government relies on, I urge you to, because this case is the epitome of the workplace, multi-employer workplace doctrine. And it makes it crystal clear throughout that opinion and the cases cited by it that this doctrine is intended to apply to situations where there are multiple tradesmen or employees from various employers on a common work site. And it is limited specifically to those situations. There is the court in Pitt-Des Moines, by the way, goes on to warn and to caution further expansion of this doctrine beyond the situation where there's a work site involving multiple employers. Specifically, the court says at page 985 that we emphasize that this doctrine, the multi-employer liability doctrine, has limits. The court goes on to indicate that Congress obviously has engaged in a balancing test here between the importance of eliminating occupational accidents and recognizing the requirement of industry to function without undue interference. And then the Pitt-Des Moines court goes on to establish a test for whether conduct falls within the multi-employer worksite doctrine. And that test is as follows at the same page. The class of employees who will trigger liability under the multi-employer doctrine should be limited to those with regular access to the areas controlled or directly impacted by the employer accused of violating a safety regulation. MYR Group had no connection whatsoever with these work sites. It had never had any employees at these work sites. It had nothing to do with them. These were L.E. Myers work sites, where L.E. Myers was engaged in conduct in performance of contracts with third-party customers that had no connection at all with MYR.
Where did MYR train these people, or did it just provide manuals or something?
Well, the record, which consists of the indictment in this case, says that generally MYR oversaw the safety programs of its subsidiaries, says that MYR provided safety manuals to its subsidiaries, and then goes on to make what is a conclusory allegation that MYR jointly with L.E. Myers was responsible for safety enforcement and safety implementation. That's what the record shows, Judge. Your Honor, I don't have anything more if you don't have any other additional questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rubenstein. Ms. Krajcik, your time expired, but you can have a minute if you'd like.
Counsel for NYR pointed out that under the multi-employer doctrine, employers other than those of the employees who are exposed to the hazard can be liable under the doctrine. And he argued that there's no application to NYR because NYR was not on the work site. But according to the allegations of the indictment, which again must be assumed to be true and must be construed in the government's favor at this juncture, NYR had control over the safety training program for all LAM employees, including the supervisors who sent Blake Lane and Wayne Cumston to do the jobs that they weren't trained to do. And that is why the multi-employer doctrine has...
But that, of course, would be the same if NYR were a third party, right? I mean, suppose LAM sent its electricians to be trained by, you know, Illinois Institute of Technology, right? So you'd make the same argument.
Again, if the trainer were an employer within the meaning of the act and exercised the control that we talked about before, then I guess the argument right. would apply in that case as well. Yes. The government's allegations in the indictment are sufficient to state a claim against NYR. The government seeks an opportunity to prove those allegations at trial, and therefore we ask that the decision below be reversed and the indictment be reinstated against NYR. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.